I think most people's careers, I don't know if there's anyone really, any actor, who's had a career that's sort of gone in a straight line. I think your careers plateau. You go up and down, especially for women. Women's careers are very different than men's, I think.
Welcome to a very special edition of the HRLND podcast.
This is an episode brought to you following a private Q&A that I had with the cast of How Love Is Spelt, a play by Chloe Moss that's taking place at the Southwark Playhouse until the 28th of September. JGA Recruitment are a really proud sponsor of the show. It forms part of our commitment to supporting the careers of emerging young British theatrical talent in the UK. But more importantly, it gave me a unique opportunity to sit down with the cast and ask them some questions about payroll and the acting profession, about HR and the acting profession, and about all the things that make up the career of an actor or actress that perhaps we don't consider, perhaps we don't see. Of course, we're going to find out a lot more about the show as well. I think it's a really interesting insight with some fantastic actors and actresses, including
Michelle Collins, Nigel Boyle, Duncan Moore, Benjamin O'Mahony, Yana Penrose, and Lana Wallace-Taylor. And it is, of course, directed by
Charlotte Peters. The play itself is about a girl called Peter who's new in town, and she's looking for romance, she's looking for friendship, and the play is all about the exciting people that she meets along the way. I don't want to give too much away. I want to hand over to the cast. They give a much better account of it than I do. Most importantly, please stay tuned for what I think is a really interesting, fascinating and insightful view of what it is like to work
in professional acting. The sound quality does start a little bit shaky, but will improve during the episode. So over to the cast and enjoy.
So question we have, so obviously we come from a recruitment background, right? So we run a recruitment business, but we have random, which you might know, specialisms, which is payroll, human resources and marketing. So joining us on the podcast, we have, let's start with yourself, Ben.
Hello, my name's Benjamin O'Mahony.
My name's Lana Wallace-Taylor.
I'm Yana Penrose.
And I'm Duncan Moore.
Hello, welcome. The first question we had is, how do you guys manage multiple careers? Because when you're acting, I know that yourself, you have a massage business. Is that
I do.
Right?
None of these guys know about that.
I've exposed it.
Why have I not had a massage yet?
For that very reason.
I feel bad. I've dropped me on the first question. I've dropped you right in it.
I promise.
You obviously, acting is your passion, right? So how difficult is it to juggle multiple careers to make it work?
I don't do much of that anymore. I used to have a couple of people who worked for me, and then I downsized the business, and I decided to move away from it because it takes too much admin time. And I've always done a few different bits. And they've all been kind of separate enough that they kind of slot together around my time frame. I always try to avoid having an employer. Just like being able to have some kind of autonomy or ability to slot things in rather than having to ask for time off, which I just didn't enjoy. So, that voiceover, teaching, coaching.
Does it make it difficult to focus on acting?
Yes, to an extent, but it depends how much time you actually have to do acting. Like whether, you know. I think it does sometimes. I know loads of mates decide to go and become personal trainers or train up and stuff, and they spend a period of time and they really throw themselves into it, and then all of a sudden they hate the fact they've built up this really successful job as a personal trainer because they want to be an actor, and then they loathe their day job.
Sure.
They feel like they're not doing their real job.
That makes sense. So Nigel's just walked into the room. Hello, Nigel.
Hello.
I've got a question for you, actually, straight off the bat. So I was sat next to a colleague of mine who, this is his first piece of theatre he's ever seen, absolutely loved it.
Yeah.
And he had no questions at the start of this, and at half-time has given me all the questions. he said, so I'm watching this, and yourself in the final scene. His question to me was, can you ask him what else does he do with the rest of his day? Does he literally just turn up for the final part of the performance, and that's it.
Yeah. I literally get here about 9:30, and then get my costume. No, I don't. We all get here for 7:00. The show goes up at 8:00. We all get here for 7:00. Have a warm up together. That's quite important.
And a chat.
And a chat, and review the day, and then we all do our own thing. So we got to get into costume, read for a bit, and then go through my scripts, go and warm up myself. But yeah, and then I don't really come on stage till nearly 10:00. So it's quite hard to stay mentally focused, but then I come down here early and listen to the show scene and kind of get myself a bit get my head in gear, as it were. And
you do stuff in the day as well, don't you? You don't just come to the
So, and I've got two kids, so it's really busy. My wife's an actress as well, so we're usually juggling kids and kind of meeting at Charing Cross Station, swapping over and going to auditions. It's full on, but...
You all play quite intense characters. How long does it take to get into character? Long?
Not very long, really. I think the main thing for me is like energy, so like making sure I've not done something in the day that I'm energetic enough, I might need to exercise something, but that I'm not too tired, or that I feel like I'm in the right headspace, so we might do like a vocal warm-up or something all together or individually, and then just making sure that we have enough energy to like go into it and really bring it.
Just professional, jump straight back into it. Yeah. Michelle Collins has just joined us as well.
Hello.
Hey Michelle,
hello.
How are you? Hi. We're just saying how exhausting it looks to watch to play your parts. Like yours in particular, you have that nervous energy that goes through. I watch it and I felt knackered watching it. I've seen it twice now.
Oh,
and both times I've gone back and I feel tired. So it must be quite exhausting. I know you've got an early start tomorrow. I have got one question, which is actually from one of our clients who said, can you ask Michelle this question? So I'm asking it. It's career orientated. They say, when it comes to acting, what would constitute a promotion? Is it the size of the part, the medium it's shown in, i.e. radio, theatre, TV or film, or the size of the paycheck, or something else?
It's really hard because the word promotion doesn't really come into our world. It's quite a strange... I don't really know. It's just a really... It's a hard question because... You know, your career is, I mean, sometimes your career is guided, sometimes it isn't. Some people go, oh, I've planned. But you're very lucky if you can plan your career, I think.
Sure.
I think it generally comes organically, and you have an agent to get jobs. So, I mean, what's a promotion? Like, I suppose if you did a good TV role and then somebody saw you in that and then gave you another role in something else, or if you do a play and a casting director comes along and then might see you for another play. So it's sort of a hard question. I mean, some, of course, all actors have to earn money, yes.
Sure.
And sometimes, for me particularly, having been a single parent for a long time, I have taken jobs for money, and I would admit that. But then I've done other jobs that didn't pay at all, but I really enjoyed them, and they actually really paid off in the end. So I think you sort of know, and it's good if you can sort of mix and match it a bit, really. But I think most people's careers, I don't know if there's anyone, really, any actor, who's had a career that's sort of gone in a straight line. I think your careers plateau. You go up and down, especially for women. Women's careers are very different than men's, I think.
That's interesting. Mm. Why is that?
Children, family. Women don't generally it's getting better in theatre, get as good roles as men, and men, women tend to give up sooner than men do. Or when women take time off to have children, they go back, and they're often not in the same place where they left. It's sort of harder to get back on the ladder,
sure.
I think. And I think a lot of women, particularly sort of around my age, there aren't, well, I would say that it's very competitive, but there are a lot of women of my age that gave up quite a long time ago because they couldn't sort of hack it, really, and didn't want, and I think it's got harder, and I think financially it's a very precarious industry.
I hadn't realised.
You shouldn't really do it for the money. If someone says,
sure.
I mean, it's not a job to do for the money, you're mad, you might as well go and be a banker or something, you know, it's...
I hadn't realised that you had that... that difficulty as a woman in the acting profession, because
but you probably have in your industry,
right? We get the stats that come back.
Yeah, and it's exactly the same, but it's also reflected in the roles that are written for women on stage.
Sure.
Like, there's a distinct imbalance between...
It is getting better, but it still needs to shift more. I mean, the last couple of years, because of what's happened in the industry, at least people are talking about it now and are aware of it.
So what's the most difficult role you have played in your career, which has varied, and how did you prepare for that?
I played a role where I had to be in AA, and I'd never been in AA myself, and I had to go to an AA meeting, and I turned up at the wrong night, and it was a boys' brigade club.
Oh, wow.
And I was so nervous. I sort of got myself so hyped up to go to this AA meeting. Oh, love, sorry, that's tomorrow. AA's tomorrow, really badly. I'm just researching something. I'm not really.
That's what they all say.
Yeah, I'm not really in AA.
taking the method of Photoshop.
So I had to, and then I also had to play, I did a thing called The Illustrated Mama, Jacqueline Wilson book, and I had to play a woman who was seriously bipolar and was covered in all these tattoos. And actually, I didn't get paid very much money for that job, and it was over the summer, but I could take my daughter with me, who was about 10 at the time. And I just had a feeling that this job was going to be good. It was a female director. It just felt good. And actually, that ended up winning an international Emmy and 3 BAFTAs. And I got paid hardly any money for that. But I had a really good feeling that that was going to be good, you know. And I did a lot of research for that. I read a couple of books. And I mean, if you can, you should. Most actors do. Most actors, if you're playing somebody that's sort of alien to you, I think you do research. I think.
You've all got quite very TV, or a lot of you've got a lot of TV background or film or different things. How different is it preparing for TV and film, or even big, huge theatres with huge numbers, to something that's so intimate as a space like this?
Well, theatre's great because you get the luxury of time, and you generally have 3 to 5 weeks rehearsal process to really talk about the character. And I think the first day of rehearsals, we just sat and talked about our characters. Whereas with TV, you don't get that luxury, and it's all very fast, and you know, it's you get on set, you've probably never let your
actor before. You're expected to be prepared.
Yeah, so you've got to prepare, of course you have, but you just don't get the luxury of time, and you don't get, you know, with theatre, you know, all that kind of performances probably speak for everyone. It's kind of evolving a little bit, and you know, certain things may change each performance, and you know, and that's a good thing, I think. It's you know, Charlotte's given us a really good platform. Working with us, and now it's ours now, and it's kind of, we're building on it, and it's changing, and it's, you know, it's very different, because with TV you've never seen the set before probably, and you've never met the actor that you might be working with, and all of a sudden you've got all this business to do, and you know, you've got to go over there that you've, you know, sit on that sofa that you've never seen before. It's, you know, it can throw you a little bit, but you kind of anticipate that now, and it's, you know, it's different.
That's good. Ivan, you had a marketing specific question, didn't you?
Yeah, so I mean, how important for you guys is personal branding within the acting profession? And how have you sort of seen this change within the emergence of social media? Does that kind of affect the way you guys prepare for things, or the way you conduct yourself?
I feel like I came out of drama school just as Twitter and stuff was becoming a thing. So we weren't told, I know that people now are told that you have to be on Twitter and stuff and have an online presence. But I've got jobs from being on social media. Yeah. You know, I've made life-changing connections from Twitter, but I also know people that have lost jobs from being on Twitter, and that's not what you want to do. So I think when you use it well, like, social media can really help your career.
Does it form part of your day-to-day careers now, though? You have to have a sort of moment of your day where you go, I need to spend a little bit of time on social media.
I don't, but a mate of mine who I did a job with, he then went off and did a really, like, this is, he wouldn't have any problem with me saying this, but he did a relatively small part in a big TV show, which has a big American following. And he had maybe about, I don't know, 500, 600 Twitter followers, done a few jobs and things like that. And he really dedicated himself to Twitter. Like, he did about 6 months of intensively tweeting all the time. So he did it every time he was on the loo. Tweet on the loo, he followed everyone back, and he managed to grow his following from about 500 people to just under 1 million.
Wow.
In six months, got a blue tick, and has used that to transfer that in, kind of for quite a good, he also was the artistic director of a theatre, like a really small community theatre. He managed to create events and channel it, make whole events, where it channeled a whole revenue stream of funding into supporting this television show that he was in. Themed events around that, which people would fly in from the States for. He had maybe two or three scenes over about 2 episodes. I'm talking like, but he built it up enough that he really sold it, and he turned it into a revenue stream, not for himself so much, but more for the companies he was part of. And I really respected that. I thought that was
that's great.
Impressive.
Fantastic story. Cody, you had a question for Michelle.
In your whole acting career, what's the question you would have wished to have been asked, but haven't?
Oh, God. That's, I can't answer that question. That's a really... Tell me what you mean.
Like, you must do loads of interviews, including this one, and there must be some aspect of what you've done that you've been really proud of, but nobody's asked you about.
Yeah, oh, God, that's a really tough one. What would I think? I think... I think having been sort of had a lot of my, been in a soap a lot of the time, I think people tend to, well, people's perceptions of you are very, people pigeonhole people into, we do it very much, not so much in America, I don't think, but we do love to put people into little boxes here, don't we? Mm. You know, and no one has ever said, oh, would you, I've only ever done one Shakespeare ever, which is Romeo and Juliet, and I never went to drama school because I didn't get into drama school. I was turned down by 11 different drama schools.
Wow.
But look at you now.
That's amazing.
I'm not saying that, you know, I don't know, perhaps I should have gone to drama school, I don't know. I might have got some more Shakespeare.
Maybe that's the question. Why did you get rejected from 11 drama schools?
Yeah, it wasn't the right time for me. There weren't many working class kids around, really, that were going to drama school, that, you know, there weren't really, you know, what was there on telly? There weren't really any soaps. There were a few sort of decent dramas, I suppose, like Play for Today's, things like that. But there wasn't that much work around for working class actors at all. And I think, you know, they probably had their quota of a working class sort of cheeky white girl. Do you know what I mean? So. I think it's very different now, but in some ways I'm sort of glad that I didn't, because I had a very varied career. I started off in the Fringe and then I went to a pop band and diversified and did lots of different things. So of course I've had a very, very different career, but I don't know.
Here at JGA HR Recruitment, we appreciate the difficulties associated with sourcing, attracting and recruiting top talent. We also understand just how costly a poor hire can be. We want to help you, and we're a niche HR recruiter that will actively listen to you so we can understand your challenges. We will then partner with you to overcome these challenges by resourcing HR talent who will help your business to achieve fantastic organisational success. Contact us today on 01727 800 377 or visit jgarecruitment.com to find out more.
Because you all know it intimately now, which part do you think is the most challenging to play? Which one do you think is the most fun to play? So if you could swap parts or pick a part, most challenging and most fun?
That's gotta be the most challenging. My character Peter is on stage for the whole time, and she meets a series of different characters throughout the course of 2 weeks. It's set over 2 weeks, and they're all people that she meets as she moves to London. So my character stays on stage throughout and interacts with each as they come on. So I think in terms of duration and amount to learn, mine is definitely the hardest, but I might say that Nigel's is the hardest, actually, I think. And I think that Ben has the most enviable part. So Ben has like a really fun, cheeky, chappy kind of like,
quite energetic. He's like his clothes off, basically.
He's in his pants the whole time. He's very like comedic, very vibrant, very energetic, and he's great at, obviously. I'd say Nigel's the most challenging because there are so many questions that people have, I feel like, I don't know if you guys have seen it, at the point at which he comes into the play, that need answering in 15 minutes. And I think that that's really, and so much of the dialogue in that scene is so like broken and repeated, and looking at it in the rehearsal room, it's really difficult to like find a path of where that goes. And I think that, I find that the most challenging scene of the bunch. What do you think?
I guess so, but I love playing the part, and as soon as I read it, I wanted to do it. And reading the whole play, I don't know how Lana stays in character, because, well, not stays in character, but without any breaks, and plays each of those scenes where she's in a different mood, she's got a different kind of outlook. It's so difficult with no breaks. And I learnt the other night that she doesn't even get a sip of water.
Slightly different questions though, Yana.
Hello.
Would you recommend acting as a career choice for those that are, you know, young, they're enthusiastic, they think, I want to be an actor, my daughter, she's 10 years old, she wants to be an actress when she grows up. Is it a career choice you would recommend?
Yes. It's hard. It's hard. It's hard out here. So would I recommend it?
Yeah.
Whenever you ask an actor that question, they're like, no way. And we were joking about it, weren't we? But we'd never recommend it. But I can't imagine ever like doing anything else ever, well, except for me, like the add-on jobs to make acting happen.
Sure.
I can't imagine doing anything else. But I think it is worth considering the risks and the lifestyle before you enter the industry. I think a lot of people sometimes go to drama school, say they want to become actors, or you know, accidentally become actors or whatever, and they don't understand what it's like to be an actor practically when you're not in the rehearsal room or on stage having a great time. Like, what is it when you're like, oh my god, how am I going to pay my rent this month? And sure, when's the next audition coming in? And oh my god, does my agent hate me?
And the moment that those worries and concerns start to take over the joy of the doing it bit, that's when you should stop. And I don't necessarily recommend acting, but I recommend doing something that you love with your whole heart. And acting is not just theatre. Like, there are so many amazing jobs in theatre that are designing, that are lighting, that are sound, that are production, that are casting, that are, like, although the actors, the people that you see on stage, I think sometimes people think that that's all there is, and that there's so many amazingly creative and more lucrative like jobs you can do in theatre, and it's not just about that.
Yeah, and also there's so much more to the job, isn't there, of being an actor than just kind of what you see, you know, in the final edit or TV or on stage. There's so much stuff that surrounds it that
are you good at time management? Are you highly motivated when there's no one else there to like push you into sending emails?
What are taxes?
What are taxes?
There we go.
Things like that. You just need to
all the other stuff.
But it's quite fun.
Yeah, it's really fun.
So while we're talking about the payroll tax fees, when it comes to things like payroll and you are running multiple jobs and you've got different people paying you from different streams, like how complex can it be for you guys to, you know, to have your payroll run correctly? If it's not, what happens? Like, where do you go?
To begin with, you earn nothing. So it's really easy. And then when you do earn, it becomes complicated specifically when you do earn it in different countries and different tax and things.
Sure.
Like that. That was the first time when I was like, this is a pain, a real pain, trying to deal with an American tax system, a South African tax system, and like an Irish tax system, wherever you are, and you are a non-domicile, so you're trying to deal with those. And if you're cheap like me and you can't be bothered to hire an accountant and you hate the idea of not knowing how it works, you just spend your whole time reading about weird tax rules and look like not ways to get around it in any way, but ways to at least understand how you're supposed to do it, how you're supposed to go, but I've paid it there, what do I do with this and that and this? That side of it took a bit of work. When you're not earning much, it's really easy. You've got hardly anything to put in the earning brackets and loads of the expenses, and then you don't owe them anything.
But also, it's so variable. Like, one year you can earn loads, and the next year you can earn not so much. And that's also something that HMRC make it quite difficult for us.
And hard to plan for, right?
Yeah, because how are you supposed to know?
So I've got a mortgage, got a house, all cool, fine. And then you come to... you realise, oh God, I've got to keep my accounts looking really stable in a job that goes up and down.
Sure.
Because I've got to, my accounts have to be readable to someone who has no idea what the life of an actor is like and knows that it will go up and down. So you need to be like, okay, I've got to make sure there's a threshold under which I do not earn, because my accounts have to look stable. I need to look like a business someone wants to invest in.
And also having to pay tax on account, which really frustrates me.
Yeah, sure.
You know, you have to pay half of what they estimate you'll earn next year. Which I think it's a good thing that the government's bringing in doing the tax every 3 months, though.
Yeah.
Because it's just going to kick a lot of people.
There's a lot of backlash around that from Equity, though, which is our trade union, in terms of making tax digital, because, I mean, there are far more well-read people about this than me, but the Equity don't like it because they say that in the long run it's more expensive for us in terms of accountants, but also it makes it even harder to track how much you will earn over so long, so all that account where you pay more in advance, all that's going to be a lot more difficult. I mean, yeah, Yeah, apparently it makes it more hard, but I
so, last couple of questions. So I know that you've been really kind of giving your time away this evening, which is fantastic. I know it's quite late and the bar is closing. So for those that haven't seen the show yet, I'm going to try and spin this around really quick so some of our listeners get access to it. Tell us individually or collectively a little bit about what the show is about and why people should come and see it.
The show is about a girl who moves from Liverpool to London in search of a new life and something better that she can't quite put her finger on, and she meets all these people along the way who are inspiring and interesting and who give her something that she hasn't necessarily experienced before in Liverpool, but it doesn't necessarily go the way she wants it to.
People keep saying this to me and I think we forget it, or I certainly forget it as a cast member. It's also a kind of mystery, right? It's kind of a kind of a puzzle as well. So there's a lot going on. It's not just a linear story. It's unusual, and it does, mystery.
But a sort of funny mystery.
Oh yeah. It's not Agatha Christie. It's
the first few scenes are very funny and
very
a lot of laughter.
Yeah.
I remember describing it as a comedy about loneliness and identity.
It's mental health. A lot of the characters are,
but it doesn't stay too serious
stuff.
For too long.
No.
It doesn't treat it in a kind of unbelievably heavy, serious way. It also pokes fun at the peculiarities of all of us, really, and hopefully does it in a way that has enough energy that it keeps it and turns it into, for quite a large part of the play, something quite enjoyable to kind of carry along with, to discover the story of.
Yeah. Right. So last question for me is going to be to the director, Charlotte, who is sat here listening to this as we go. So you've interpreted Chloe Moss's works in this performance. What's been the biggest challenge for you moving, bringing your own interpretation to the work? What's been the biggest challenge getting this production where we are now?
I think that when people see the play, as we were saying, it's a mystery. And so when we were reading the play, there were lots of different ways we could go with the production. And actually working out the way we wanted to interpret the characters, put those characters in front of an audience, working out the way we wanted to go from scene to scene, what we wanted the audience to get from each scene, what we wanted them to get from Peter's character. I think that's been the most exciting and biggest challenge collectively, because most plays give you all the information you need. And this one is really exciting because you get to read so much in between the lines as a director. You get to work with a company to kind of figure those things out. So I think that's been the biggest challenge.
May I just say a special thanks to the cast and crew of How Love Is Spelt. As I mentioned, it's playing at the Southwark Playhouse until the 28th of September, so still plenty of time to book your tickets online. In the meantime, thank you ever so much for joining me on the HRLND podcast, and I look forward to joining you all again in a couple of weeks. Take care.
Thanks, guys, for joining me. It's been an absolute pleasure. Cheers, guys.
Thank you so much for tuning in to the HRLND podcast. My name is Nick Day and I am founder of JGA Recruitment. We are a specialist HR recruiter, so if you have an HR vacancy that needs assistance, please do get in touch. All contact details can be found in the episode notes. In the meantime, tune into future episodes of the HRLND podcast by subscribing to the show on any of your favourite podcast channels. Till next time.